400 episodes. I can't even count that high. Congratulations.
Live from the place where we somehow, someway made it to 400 episodes, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. On today's very special episode, it's like seeing a Yeti, Bigfoot, or Joe's mom dance the Mamba. We welcome to the show, OG! On a Friday? You gotta be kidding me. Also, we'll have clips from some of our favorite interviews of the past 4 years, plus messages from some of our favorite podcasters. In today's FinTech segment, we're also happy to welcome the CEO of Haven Life, where they're mixing some crazy FinTech ideas with life insurance. This should be interesting. Jerome Ben-Zvi. And now, two guys who could never blow out 400 birthday cake candles, although they are full of hot air, Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
Hey! And a very happy celebratory. Oh, man, I like that lei that you're wearing. Nice job, OG.
I got my noisemakers too, but that's, you said I can't do them on the air.
Is that what you, when you tell your kids to pull your finger, is that like make the noisemaker? Is that what that is? Hey, everybody, I am Joe Salci, Average Joe Money on Twitter, and the other guy, or OG, sitting across from me for a very special Friday episode of the Stacky Benjamin Show, because we are 400 episodes young on this little freight train.
We couldn't time this out so that it happened on Halloween. No. How did you manage to be off by one episode? We could have had a double part. We had Halloween. We could have had, you know, a party.
Okay, you want to know something funny? Remember at the start when we used to have just Friday was a shorter interview that was just one little interview before we moved the round table from Monday to Friday? Mm-hmm. Those episodes didn't have numbers.
So
we're actually at like 440, but according to our weird numbering system, this is episode. So congratulations. We made it 400 episodes.
And many more.
Thanks a lot to Paula Pant from, of course, Afford Anything and from this year podcast. She's on here every Friday for kicking off the show. And of course, Mom's Creepy Neighbor Doug for doing his work. It's been 4 years with these people. Almost 3.5 years here. You and I have been podcasting for about 5.5 years now. Can you believe that?
That is ridiculous. That is really ridiculous to think that my kids were 4 and 2 when this started.
And the fact that Mom still hasn't started charging us rent, I think is also strange. Hey, we got a great show for everybody today. As Doug alluded to, we've got some of our favorite interviews. Some of these you might have heard, some of them you might not have. Most of these are older, OG. These are some moments from the show that people may or may not remember, intertwined with some of our best friends in podcasting. And on that note, I have a message here from Scott Allen Turner from Financial Rockstar. Let's see what Scott's got to say.
This is Scott Allen Turner, host of the Stacking Cats Show. You're listening to 97.1 K-Rock, the home of... What's that, Katie? Oh, wrong script. Oh, yeah, next one, okay. You're listening to Joe and the crew of the Stacking Benjamin Show. Congratulations, guys. 400 episodes. I don't know how you did it. And I'm being honest there. I have no idea how you did it. Somebody said you recorded 100 shows and then just replayed them over and over and over again, passing them off as new material. Well played, sir. Well played. And cut. Katie, have you listened to the Stacking Benjamin Show? Is that about the founding fathers or something? All right. Maybe I'll check it out.
Maybe someday Scott will listen to the show.
I like his idea, though. We could just hit repeat on all these. We could get to 800 pretty quick.
We could. Like next week. Welcome to our 800th episode. We could be 1,000. I mean, it doesn't matter how many times you replay it, does it? Well, speaking of replay, we've got one of our favorites here. I saw this last week, OG. I saw my creativity man crush, Austin Kleon, at the DigimilX conference in San Antonio. I'll actually have some audio from that coming up in the next few weeks here. But Austin Kleon has written a couple great books called Steal Like an Artist and Show Your Work. And for anybody that thinks that they're not creative, that the creativity has nothing to do with financial planning, I think they have a lot to learn there. But certainly Austin coming on the show and talking about stealing ideas, you know, was very powerful. So let's listen to a little snippet of our discussion with Austin. Inspiration of mine. I've always rallied against these people that have side hustles, right? They have these side gigs after they get done working, these projects that aren't the main task, because I always thought that kind of steals from the mojo you've got for the main task. But in Steal Like an Artist, you talk about the value of side projects. There's a photo of you and your guitar and about doing these other things that have nothing to do with your job. Do you reconcile those, or are you all about the side hustle?
I like the side hustle. I mean, I think what's really interesting is when you have a couple of hustles going on, they don't really take away from each other as much as they inform each other. So whenever I quit writing or drawing for the day and I go over and pick up my bass or play some music or record something, I always get an idea for my writing when I'm procrastinating doing the music. And I always get a musical idea when I'm writing. And so I think what happens is when you have, or something that happens when you kind of switch over to your side hustle, your brain is kind of subconsciously working on your other hustle at the same time. And I just think that if you keep these things in your life, these things that you love to do, eventually they'll start talking to each other and something will come out of it.
It's funny you say that, because the distinct feeling I get from you and your blog and all of your work is this value in play. You know, we become adults, right? We get rid of play, but there's this huge value in playing.
Oh, gosh. I was watching my son this morning, and anyone who doesn't think that play is serious business should sit with a 2-year-old who's like playing with their cars. Because I look at my son sometimes, and he has this look on his face, this just painful concentration almost, that I'm like, I'm not sure this is fun for him, actually. When he's playing, I'm not sure that it's actually fun. He's just in the world, and he's pushing his cars around. And I just had this revelation today that it's just like, if I could infuse my work with the same determination and intensity that my son plays with his cars, I would be set for the rest of my career. But there's something different about play and fun. It's not the same thing. Play can be fun, but play is very much more about imagination and being completely engrossed in what it is that you're doing. You know, you kind of hit that flow state that Csikszentmihalyi talks about.
That was exactly where I was going to go. You've clearly read that book.
Yeah, Csikszentmihalyi is such a, you know, he's a great, anyone who wants to know a little bit more about creativity, his book Flow. It was interesting. The other day I read David Allen's book for the first time, Getting Things Done, which is, you think about it as a business productivity book. But David Allen's whole point is that, you know, if you get your systems together to be productive, you can hit that flow state. He doesn't actually use the word flow, but he's talking about the same thing that Csikszentmihalyi is that there's a thing when you're playing or working where time falls away and you just get in the zone.
Let's skip there, because in your last book, Show Your Work, you talk about creativity and structure, right? I mean, the whole thing about David Allen is structure, and people think creativity and structure don't play nicely together, but you disagree.
It's all about structuring your creativity. So it's about structuring moments in your day where you can experience that kind of raw play. And for example, I'll give you a very concrete example. John Cleese, the very famous comedian, Monty Python actor, he says that you have to have boundaries of space and boundaries of time in order to be creative. And what he means is you have to have a place that you go to, some sort of room, some sort of setup that has all your materials and the things that you're going to play with. And then you have to have time set aside, like 90 minutes, where no one's going to interrupt you. And if you have that space and that time, it's only then that you can really get in that zone and creative things can start to happen. Well, it's certainly true. And you know, the beginning of my creative life is, you know, my mom would be cooking and she'd sit me down at the kitchen table with like crayons and paper. And she would say, I have to cook dinner, make me a picture. And then that was the constraint. It's like, you've got your materials, you got your space and your time. And I really don't think that what I do now is any different than I used to do when I was a kid. It's just about having the time, space, and materials laid out so you can make something happen.
We'll have a link to the whole interview with Austin, that whole episode, in the show notes at stackybenjamins.com. But creativity, you know, in financial planning, creativity doesn't get enough respect. People think that you don't have to be that creative with your financial plan, but it seems like every time I worked on somebody's financial plan, there was always one part that if you thought the way that Austin thinks, where you're looking at other people's experience and making it your own, not stealing it by saying, oh, these people have a great retirement, you should retire like them, but taking things that work and then reformatting that, you can create a lot of great stuff in your life.
It's like when you go to have a great experience on a vacation, or, you know, if you want to make a good chocolate cake, if you've already got somebody who's made the chocolate cake before, can't you just mimic what they did? You know, make sure you use the same chocolate chips, make sure you use the same type of flour, that sort of thing. If you have somebody that goes on a great vacation, maybe use a similar travel agent, or, you know, that sort of stuff. Yeah. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. We go to Disney from time to time. We haven't been in a number of years here, but I just asked my friend who is a really big Disney guy. I said, what do we do? And he said, oh, you have to do these five things.
Yeah.
Guaranteed success.
Right.
Okay, great. And then we did those five. I'm like, that was fantastic. He says, I told you.
Yeah, but it wasn't his trip. It was your trip. You made it your own.
Yeah, we did some other things too.
I'll give you an example from my recent Maine trip, which is I used to talk all the time about a friend of mine's client who wanted to retire at a youngish age. And what I noticed, we stayed at a bed and breakfast, OG, and these people were younger. They were still in their working years. And actually, the husband, Eric, went off to work for a major company each day during the week. And Sue took care of the duties around the bed and breakfast during the week. And on the weekend, weekend days were there, Eric did most of the taking care of us while Sue, those were kind of her days off, right? But it's funny because we used to talk about, I don't know about Eric and Sue's situation who we stayed with. We talked about this woman that a friend of mine worked with. She didn't have enough money to retire right now, but she was getting close and she really wanted a different lifestyle. Almost like Lisa Peterson said on Wednesday, she just knew she needed something different. She loved the coast. She couldn't afford to live on the coast. So she bought a bed and breakfast across the street, where across the street from the houses on the coast, you know, the land along any of the lake shores or any of the ocean front.
It's a third as much.
Yes, way cheaper. But it was up on a little hill so you could see. You could see, you had a nice view, partially blocked, but you had a decent view. And it was a bed and breakfast so that the people coming in paid her mortgage payment for her. That gave her more money for her to be able to live on. She could also write off a lot of the expenses that she would normally have because she was a business owner and she was an extrovert. So different than, you know, this might be horrible for an introvert, but for somebody who's an extrovert and really gets a lot of energy from being around people, she's meeting new people all the time.
Right.
And this woman went from this job she hated to the lifestyle she loved just with some creative thinking. Yeah, good stuff. Austin Kleon talking about creativity there. We got a couple more people here, OG, some of our favorite podcasters. We'll start off with, it looks like we've got notes from Linda P. Jones and from David Stein.
Hi, it's Linda P. Jones here from Be Wealthy and Smart. Just wishing Stacking Benjamins a happy 400th episode. Joe, Neighbor Doug, and OG, you guys are so awesome, and I can't wait to see you in the basement again. Congratulations, and here's to 1,000 more.
Hi, this is David Stein of the Money for the Rest of Us podcast. Congratulations, Joe, OG, Kathleen, and your regular roundtable panelists for reaching your 400th episode. That's amazing. I used to worry that I would run out of topics on my show, but after listening to yours and realizing you have done it 400 times, I now know that if I run out of things to say, I can just follow your lead and talk about anything, including the contents of my mom's basement. Congratulations.
Thanks to Linda and David. I think, David, there's a thank you there. But
there's never a shortage of things to talk about.
I know.
Board games, basements.
Movies.
Movies.
Who needs to talk about financial
t-shirts.
Planning?
Yeah,
that's right. Goats in the runway. Yeah.
Amazon links. Funny things people buy on Amazon. Never run out. Never run out.
Those are some of the funniest parts. That's some of the stuff that keeps us podcasting, I think. is talking about that. Of course, there's always a great, interesting take on those. You know, Tess Vigeland talked about, oh, gee, that there's very few things in personal finance to talk about. But there's always an interesting take, isn't there? It's always how humans interact with these very simple principles that makes it fun. Yeah, good stuff. Speaking of that, you know, one of the big problems in financial planning is people are living longer. And an episode that hardly anybody listened to, I thought it was going to be super interesting. I remember you telling me you thought the topic seemed boring, but man, it was great. Anna Corwin, who is a researcher, Anna talked about this study that she did about why nuns, remember what nuns living longer than anybody else? And about why people live longer lives. And living a long life is a big issue for financial planning. It was a phenomenal interview. Most people didn't hear it because they don't want to hear about nuns living longer. But guess what? It's the 400th episode. So you're going to hear a little snippet of it. I thought this was really cool.
And I love the last one is a financial planner on your list, Anna. And I'm glad it's the last point here because it's so apropos for people thinking about financial planning. So many people want things. They want more. And you say here in number six, getting rid of this quest for more also makes them more healthy.
Yes, it really does. This idea of letting go of attachments. And this is something that the nuns do all their lives. They start when they join the convent. They take these vows, a vow, and one of the vows is a vow of poverty, which means that they, you know, they vow to, and they think, you know, this is connected to their spiritual quest of sort of not being attached to material things. And then, but what it means is that they don't, they practice giving things away. They practice. And they also practice, they take a vow of obedience. So they practice not determining where they're going to go and what they're going to do at all times. And that can be hard. It's hard throughout the life to sort of not be in charge or to not acquire new things or to give things away instead of acquiring them. But it gives them a lot of practice that can help at the end of life so that when they, you know, can't walk anymore or can't work anymore and they have to retire or they have to move to an infirmary, they kind of have adjusted. They have practiced giving up things, letting go. Mm. And it really helps with those transitions when they have to let go of their job or let go of where they had been living. And so I think that for those of, you know, we live in a very materialistic world, but if we can start practicing that early on, letting go of what you want, letting go of the things you want, letting go, it can really help for the times when you must let go, when you are sort of forced to let go of those things.
Well, I think there's an ancillary thing, and maybe this is a want too. Maybe I'm completely wrong here. Correct me if I am, which is that living for experiences and being a part of something bigger than yourself might be something bigger than living for baubles anyway.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, if you think about the sort of the emotional trajectory of want of acquiring something material, it maybe feels really good when you're anticipating it, and it feels really good maybe at that moment that you get it, whatever it is. But then that fades fast. But yeah, living for being, living for beauty, living for, you know, getting your fulfillment out of things that are internal, that lasts.
You know, that singularity of purpose, OG, the fact that you live your life with a purpose and also serving others, you know, that whole thing, Zig Ziglar says it, those people that know business know this, if there's entrepreneurs listening, Zig Ziglar always said, help others get what you want and you'll always, he didn't say that, did he? That's
something Joe said. Yeah. It's not going to work out as well as it worked out.
Help others get what I want. Oh, that's not it.
Help other people do the things that I need done for me. Then me get what me want.
Help other people. The rest of them. Help other people help me. Boy, that makes me sound selfish, doesn't it? Yeah. Help
others get what they want.
Yes.
And then you'll
always get what you want. I found during this marathon that we just ran, I was running with Cheryl, and I realized that I was so worried about her because she's been having some leg problems. The marathon went very easy for me, and I realized afterwards on the way home, it was partially because, not even partially, a lot because I was so worried about somebody else's pain that it made my 26 miles easier, you know? Because I spent, and I found that when I pace my friends doing these ultra marathons, I'll pace them 20 miles, I always look back afterwards. I'm like, you just ran that like it was a walk in the park. And it's because I'm so worried about making sure that they don't fall down during my part of the race. Right.
That, yeah, you're working on somebody else. You don't have time to think about your own stuff.
Yeah, but isn't that true in life? I think this whole thing about nuns living longer. But living longer, let's talk about that for a second, brings up different problems, OG. Brings up a huge list of problems.
I think the biggest one has to be the impact of inflation on a portfolio. And it kind of shuts the door. I can't see any way that when you're 60, if you're staring down a 30 to 40 year retirement, in an ever-increasing lifestyle, right, we know is going to increase in terms of cost. How do you take that quote-unquote mainstream approach and at that point have 30, 40, 50, 60% of your portfolio in fixed income?
Yeah.
We talk about that a lot, and I get feedback from people all the time that say, all equities, oh my gosh, you must be crazy. I don't know that. I mean, all equities all the time. But you got to have some diversification in there, but you know, you look at the, you know, what Money Magazine says and says, take your, you know, subtract your age from 100 and that's how much you should have in bonds.
What?
You tell me that at 50, when I'm looking at a life expectancy of another 50 years.
That's crazy.
That I should put half of my money in something that is guaranteed to barely outpace inflation, if at all.
People are giving advice based on longevity for their parents and grandparents.
Yeah. I have a grandfather who just celebrated his 97th birthday and grandma's just celebrated her 93rd, I think. Yeah, 93rd. And I can guarantee when they were 60, they weren't thinking about a 38-year retirement. You know?
Yeah.
They weren't saying, oh, well, we'll be still kicking around. So that rate, not only is life expectancy increasing, but the rate of change in the life expectancy increase is also increasing, if that makes sense. The slope is getting steeper.
That does make sense. I have to say a big thanks to two groups that have helped us make this happen. And actually, OG, over the years, we've had a number of groups that have helped us reach 400 episodes. Number one, before we get actually to those two groups, just people using our link at stackybenjamins.com/Amazon has been a huge help. We bought lots of the equipment that we use because of people going there. That has been so important. But lately, it has been hugely the support of two great organizations, Magnify Money. Nick and Brian and the team at Magnify Money have been there with us for a long, long time, OG, and we couldn't have done it without them.
Nothing else to say to that other than thank you.
Yeah, they are a great organization. I was so pleased, for those people that don't know how Magnify Money became our sponsor. Nick, as you know, OG, is great radio. Every stinking time he's on, he's fantastic radio. The guy just knows debt products inside out. He knows all the dirty laundry, and his mission of showing people the dirty laundry so you can stay out of it. Just a fantastic mission, and we're so happy. So stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money to know more about them. And also to our friends over at SoFi. It was actually Nick at Magnify Money who initially introduced us to SoFi, and then our friend Melanie Lockhart, who SoFi was looking for a company that does podcasts, which was us. And she said, you know what? I think that you guys are a match. And that clearly also, OG, has been a great match for us. Very proud to be affiliated with a company that does so much work helping people with their student loans. You know, if somebody's an entrepreneur, they hook them up with other entrepreneurs. They hook them up with incubators. They defer loans. They do all kinds of things to help entrepreneurs. When people don't need to refinance their student loans, they tell them not to refinance. They work with employers to try to get them to help people pay off their student loans. This is a company that just gets it. And I'm so excited about being affiliated with SoFi as well.
Awesome two companies for sure.
Thanks a ton to them. We're going to do a fintech segment today. We got an exciting fintech segment. You know, lots of companies in the insurance space work online, OG, but at some point, humans get involved. I love today's fintech segment. Our friends over at Haven Life have a unique way of looking at and evaluating term insurance. Let's talk to them in today's very special 400th episode fintech segment. And your own Ben Zvi joins us in the basement. Welcome, man.
It's good to be here.
I'm glad you can join us, and I know how thrilling it is for you on your worldwide tour talking about Haven to be in my mom's half-finished basement.
I love basements. They make me feel right at home.
Well, did you spend much time as a kid growing up in basements?
I did. It's one of the facts of life of growing up in suburbia. You spend a lot of time in basements playing ping pong and doing other things.
That's right. Ping pong, board games. Right. But let's talk about this, because Haven Life is such a different company. And it's great to see, with all the fintech segments that we've done, Yaron, it's great to see some real innovation in something that's been so stodgy for so long, as you know. Did you personally see something that you didn't like in insurance, or was there some frustration for you? Was it a piece of the market you thought that could be done better? Tell me about how Haven came about.
Yeah, I really came to life insurance as a customer first. And my wife and I, you know, about 6 years ago had our first child, and, you know, I needed to buy life insurance. Somebody kind of tapped me on the shoulder and said, you got to get this done. And I did what I always do, which is I went online and I tried to get it done kind of quickly and efficiently, the same way I did my banking and my, you know, other financial transactions. And kind of what I found was, to my mind, just surprising that nobody had really sort of thought about how to make it easy for people to buy life insurance online and figure out what they need and actually get coverage in place. So that really started me on creating Haven. And here I am a number of years later, excited to bring insurance into the world of fintech and innovation.
Do you come at it as a tech guy, or do you come at it as somebody that was in insurance or financial related fields?
Well, I definitely wasn't in insurance. So I really come at it first as a customer. I think that's always kind of in the back of my mind. And that's what we really try to do, is think about the people actually need to buy coverage and get protection for their families. And then the second thing is, I really think a lot about how we can use technology to bring this process and this product into the 21st century. Because, you know, life insurance really hasn't changed that much in quite a long time. And so there's opportunities for us to make it simpler and more transparent using technology while still giving kind of a great product.
Well, let's dig in just a little bit, Yaron, because I think some of these innovations are exciting. But tell us how the process works that's different than what people would normally expect when they go to apply for insurance elsewhere.
Yeah, sure. So what's unique about us is, you know, Haven Life is really the only place where you can buy, you know, high quality and affordable term life insurance completely online. So the way it works is a customer can come to our website, really quickly get a sense of how much coverage they need, what it's going to cost them, and really unique to us, actually apply in a matter of minutes online. And what we do is we kind of take all the information that you give us, and we've built out proprietary algorithms that can then go and give you an actual price right away so you can get your coverage started in a matter of minutes. We've even been able to, for qualified, healthy applicants, skip the medical exam. So in a lot of cases, you may not even need to get a medical exam to get a great price from us.
Man, there's so many questions that I have there. So number one is, at no time in, I don't know if this is most cases or all cases, is there a human involved in that transaction?
That's right. Only if you want a human involved. So obviously we have customer service that's always waiting to answer any questions that you might have, and you can call us or chat us. But that's really driven by you, the customer. We want to feel like, you know, this is driven by our customers, and we're there to help them when they choose and when they need.
And then secondly, obviously, coverage without a medical exam, that just, for a guy that was in the trenches for 16 years, that's something completely new to me. How did you make that happen?
Yeah, with a lot of time and effort, I'll say that. But really, you know, we just want to make this product easy for people to buy. And so what we realized as we started doing this is that when you apply, there's actually a lot of information that we can gather about a person online in real time so that we can make smart decisions about, you know, can we offer them coverage at a good price without actually having to go, you know, and prick them with a needle. You know, the world of kind of online information has made that possible now. So what's unique about us is that we've taken all that and built a system where we can ingest it and interpret it in real time and then kind of give you the offer to skip the medical exam in some cases.
I would help people sometimes apply for life insurance back when I was a financial advisor. And, you know, there were some times when people would look me in the eye with their spouse sitting next to me and they'd say, no, I don't smoke, or I don't do something. And then we would have the medical exam and it turned out they were lying, right? How do you get through those traps when it's all online?
Yeah, so it turns out, actually, we find that most of our customers are pretty honest when they come through and go through our application process. But obviously, there's a few things that we do. Number one is the data that we can get online lets us check some of the things that you tell us about yourself. So, for example, we can actually, when you apply with us, you give us the ability to go look at prescription histories. So there's things that we can check against as people apply through our process. And in some cases, we do still require a medical exam. So that kind of really acts as a check for us, just to be able to confirm that what you told us is actually accurate.
Tell me more about the calculator, because I find also that's something, is, as you know, that's something a lot of people get wrong. They don't have any idea how much coverage they should really have. How does your calculator work?
Yeah, it's a great question. One of the things that we do that is kind of unique is we take the point of view that there's no actual one right answer to what the right amount of coverage is for you. The right amount of coverage is a lot of art and not just science.
Right.
So people have different risk tolerances, for example, and that's really going to determine what the right coverage is for you. So what we do is we ask people to give us some basic information about them, things that really do drive how much insurance you need, things like your income, you know, how many kids you have, if you want to cover their college expenses. And then we take all that and we give you kind of high, medium, and low options and say, hey, a high option would be lots of coverage and it would be able to cover these kinds of things if you were to die, whereas the sort of more minimal approach would be like this. And so that really kind of gives people a way to bucket themselves into, am I someone who needs and wants a lot of coverage, or am I someone who is okay with more of a minimalist approach?
And it's funny, Jerome, because you don't know, well, I don't think you know this, but that was kind of a loaded question, because I actually went through the process before I asked you to come on. And I found and that's why I asked that question, because every calculator for me just spits out a number. And I'm with you. I think that's totally, totally wrong. I think there are some people out there that feel better walking the tightrope. And maybe I have enough, maybe I don't, but I don't want to spend a nickel more than I should. And there's other people where that's horrifying for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we really shouldn't make people feel bad about that. You know, people are in different situations and have different approaches to these things. And our attitude is we just want folks to have some measure of protection and really think about what the right fit for them is.
When people ask about insurance, one of the questions they always ask, obviously, is about stability of the company. Haven Life is probably a company that a lot of our listeners haven't heard of yet. Who backs Haven Life?
Great question. So even though we're kind of startup-y and very innovative, we're actually backed by a 150-year-old, very big life insurer, one of the biggest in the country, MassMutual. It's been around for a long time, and they really back financially the term life insurance policy that we sell. So you really get the best of financial stability and the promise to pay on your policy, combined with kind of a very technology-driven and customer-friendly process.
I'm sure that it doesn't stop here, Jerome. Can you share with us anything that's coming down the pike? Because, as you know, nobody listens to this. Your secret's safe with us if there's something coming that you don't want anybody to know about.
We're doing lots of things, and we have a lot of things that are going to hit early next year. Everything from continuing to simplify our application process to make it even easier for people, but then also adding kind of additional benefits that you may get as part of your policy that aren't necessarily there in a traditional process.
Well, that's exciting. It's Haven Life and havenlife.com. We'll have a link to it in our show notes at stackybenjamins.com. Thanks for hanging out with us for a few minutes.
Really enjoyed it. Thanks, Joe.
How's that for innovation, OG? A human never touches it.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And it's the right thing.
It is cool to see insurance companies that get it. So we'll have a link to Haven Life in our show notes. It's havenlife.com for more on Haven and the way that they work. All right. Let's get back to our party. I think we've got messages here from our friends Jen Hempel and Philip Taylor, Mr. PT.
A big happy 400th to you, Joe, and everyone in Mom's Basement. This is Jen Hempill of the Her Money Matters podcast. Now, Joe, I wanted to come up with something witty and funny, but let's face it, you are the king of funny. So instead, I'm just going to wish you a heartfelt congratulations, as you have done so much in the financial space in terms of entertainment. And cover up your ears, Joe, just cover them up, and education as well. So wishing you the best and wishing you much more success.
Hey, Joe and OG, you old crotchety bastard. Honestly, I didn't think you'd make it this far. Congrats on 400 episodes.
You're the crotchety bastard, not me.
Are you talking to me? Oh, yeah. Definitely. Absolutely.
Crotchety Bastages. Remember that movie, Johnny Dangerously?
No.
Oh, you never saw that?
Don't think so.
That's a fun throw. I wonder if that movie holds up. But there was a bad guy, and he always called people. He had a bad speech impediment, so he'd call people farging bastages. You farging bastages? And, you know, the show starts off with this winter, like in Chicago, and it says, it was the worst July in history. And, like, everything was just, yeah, you farging bastages and you farging ice holes. Those were the things. My mom actually got into that for a little while, where she called people ice holes just because she thought the movie was funny. Having a plan, as you know, is the basis of this entire show, OG. And you really, really need a plan when you are trying to drive illegally across the United States faster than anybody's ever done it. Ed Bolian broke what's called the Cannonball Run record, which is illegally driving across the United States. And another fantastic interview on the show, also from a long time ago. I thought this would be great for our 400th episode. Let's listen to Ed talking about having a plan.
That's why I love having you on, because a lot of financial planning is about preparation, and you just didn't set out one day. You know, you were sitting with a buddy of yours at the bar and go in New York and said, you know what we should do? We should drive to LA. You actually modified a car and put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah, it's not really the kind of thing you say, let's do this tomorrow or a week from now. Everybody should find an excuse to go on a long road trip, like, especially if it's not about the speed, because it's just a great way to experience our country. But to really do it like this, I mean, it took a lot of planning, a lot of strategy in terms of the timing, minimizing traffic, and controlling all the variables.
Now, I'm surprised that you didn't use a Lamborghini. Why did you choose a Mercedes?
Well, I needed something that was comfortable, because as much as I do love the Lamborghinis, they are not quite the road trip cars that we like them to be. They're much more at home whizzing around a racetrack or a mountain road than sitting and supporting your back for hours on end.
Well, tell me how you modified the Mercedes. What did you have to put into it to make it ready for this type of a trip?
We looked at a lot of different cars to use, and so things like the Ferrari 612 or a Porsche Panamera, Bentley Continental GT, all the Ferraris, Lamborghinis, and things like that, because I would have loved done it in something a bit more exotic, because I pretty much knew I'd need to keep it the rest of my life as a conversation piece.
Right.
We needed something that had a strong but adjustable suspension so that it could balance out the weight of the additional fuel cells that we were going to use, because it's really important to maximize your fuel range and then extend it so that you don't have to stop as often, obviously. And then every sort of anti-cop countermeasure device that you could ever read about, find, or build, we had that. And so the, you know, it looks like a mission control center in the cockpit of the car, but the Mercedes worked really well because that's really what they're designed to do, is get in, go fast, be comfortable, and not break.
Now, were you the only driver? Is there any rules about around the Cannonball Run record that you have to be the only driver, or was there two of you? Did you have a navigator?
There were two of us. There's not really a governing body for illegal outlaw cross-country road racing. Despite the Guinness actually won't officiate the record because it can't be done without breaking the law. But it's really just this crazy fraternity of lunatics that we all sort of know each other and talk about it. And you really just have to prove it to all of them. And I suppose Google is sort of the efficient of all this.
I read before, when you first did it, speaking of law enforcement, you got pulled over nearly immediately?
Well, it was actually earlier that day before we left. So we left at 9:55 p.m. on a Saturday evening. But we were scouting routes out of New York. And among the devices that we had in the car, we had several navigation systems and iPads and iPhones running, you know, Garmin apps and Waze and Trapster and all the different traffic applications and things like that. And it's so much data to bring into the car. We were inundated with it. And my co-driver, Dave, claimed to be completely impartial as to which navigation system he preferred, but he is a big user of Waze.
Yeah.
And as we were trying to find the Lincoln Tunnel and the most efficient way to get there, it asked us to make a left and then an immediate right, and then it would get us there somehow faster based on user uploaded data. What we found that was an illegal right turn down a one-way street, and I was immediately pulled over and questioned by the police and had to break out the Southern charm and the used car salesman tactics and talk my way out of a ticket there. But fortunately, we did.
Did they see all the devices you had in the car? Did you get questioned about that?
Fortunately, we were kind of in the middle of a busy street, and we were very clearly disoriented and not from around there. And so we were fortunate that I don't think he had a lot of time to worry about all those things.
Not like some of those backcountry Georgia cops. If you're not from around here, that's doom.
Exactly. Yeah, that's where the revenue comes from, right?
Yeah. Can we talk about laying out the trip? When you laid it out, I would guess you left on a Saturday night because that was when on Sunday traffic would be lightest. But how did you navigate around all the cities as you went across the United States?
So obviously, essentially controlling the uncontrollable factors are what made the margin by which we beat the record possible. And they're really what make the trip possible. So finding the times when you'll pass through the major cities where you'll have a lower likelihood of traffic, less construction, less bad weather, and things like that. So there's really three routes you can take, 20, 40, and 80. And 40 is the most traditional. And at that time of the year, it was really the only one that was possible because there was snow in Colorado. But we did mostly 40, and we wanted to make sure in leaving on Saturday night that we were through the Midwest by the time everybody was waking up on Sunday to go to church. And then Sunday is obviously the lowest traffic day of the week.
I know on I-40, I live not that far off of I-40 where it hits Little Rock, and I know there's a huge construction zone. How did you plan out some of these construction areas?
Well, we looked at times of the year where construction was the lightest. And so couldn't do it when it's too much in the winter, where obviously construction is almost always stopped, but because you needed to avoid any inclement weather in the Northeast. But we looked at every kind of traffic application that we could, and we used some spotters throughout the route. I had one guy in Pennsylvania, one guy in Ohio, one guy in Missouri, and one guy in New Mexico, which we knew were the areas that were most likely to have construction in the event that we would need to reroute. And so they would run about 150 or 200 miles ahead of us and just call us if there were any issues with weather, traffic, cops, things like that.
Oh, cool. Did you suffer many slowdowns?
We didn't. We were fortunate to be really the best prepared team that's ever tried to do this, only based on the information that we had to go on. We had Brock Yates' book that came out in the early 2000s about how he and Gurney had planned it and you know, everything that had gone into Cannonball in 71, 72, 75, and 79. We had the U.S. Express information and Alex Roy, who was the previous record holder's documentation of it. We had Richard Rawlings from Gas Monkey Garage on the Discovery Channel, his interviews and conversations with him about what it was going to be, what essentially doing the trip was like. Mm-hmm. And so with all that knowledge base to go on, we were in a better position to do it. But success still hinged on not running into a big traffic jam, not having an accident in front of us that jammed things up, not having bad weather that slowed us down. And we got unbelievably fortunate with all those.
Yeah, people think you just get in the car and just drive fast, man.
But I remember this interview. It took a lot of planning, right? And then you had a lot of spotters along the way.
Yes.
Kind of help out. Yep.
Making sure there's no cops in the way, that there's no road construction, no accidents. I love that. Just fantastic. And, you know, there's that statistic that people plan more for a family vacation, which made me think that Ed would be great to talk to. And of course he was, than they plan for a retirement.
That always cracks me up.
I know.
I mean,
but it's a real statistic.
It is. Absolutely. It is. There's all sorts of other funny ones that go with that, that we can talk about some other time, but why would you do that? Why would you I mean, I know why. Human behavior tells you why, right?
Yeah.
Which is, it's not fun to look at. And if you're not quite prepared as you want to be, it's not fun to recognize that you're, you know, that you're not where you want to be. And sometimes it's the fact that you're just incapable of putting it all together. And how do you start from a planning standpoint?
Yeah, no, it's
plus Disneyland is way more fun than retirement planning.
Yeah, but it could be Disneyland over and over and over for the rest of your life if you do it well.
If you do it right,
yeah,
you got it.
Good stuff there. Let's pull back the curtain here a little bit. You can't have a podcast that goes off 3 days a week without working with some great partners who understand what you're trying to do on the show, and they continually hook you up with some fantastic guests for the show without wasting your time. We get so many pitches, just, you know, and this is not a behind the scenes show. We have the green room for that. But just for our 400th episode, I'll tell people we get about 5 pitches per day of people that want to be on this show. We're very protective of the show. And so we ignore most of the pitches that come through, and we try to make sure that we design a show that we find interesting and fun for ourselves. Because, OG, as you know, if we're not entertained, it doesn't matter if we entertain anybody else, right? But because we need to have great guests come on, we forged some great relationships with some phenomenal public relations people. And of course, public relations people have sometimes a thankless job where they have to sometimes try to make that square peg look like it fits the round hole. But there's some people that do that very well by only giving us round pegs for the round holes. And those people would be, got to say a big thank you to Mark Meadows, to our friends, Stephen Bedford at Simon & Schuster, the public relations team at Penguin Books, at Random House, just some fantastic people that we've gotten to work with on several occasions because they understand what we're looking for and only present us with those guests. I have to say that when Mark Meadows writes to me and says, "Hey, Joe, I've got a guest," that they're probably going to come on the show because I know he's already done the due diligence it takes to know what the show is. And he listens to the show.
Right.
Also, our friends at Gregory PR in Philadelphia have done a great job with some of the more technical guests that we've had on the show. So thanks to them. Also, thanks to some of our contributors to the show. Jamie Wise from Buzz Indexes has done a great job lately. Love having him on. Of course, the Roundtable Gang, OG. Paula, we mentioned earlier, but Len Penzo. If Len Penzo hadn't believed in our show early on, this show would have never gotten off the ground. The fact that Len Penzo decided to be a part of this show when he had been Blogger of the Year with the Plutus Awards, he'd been on Kiplinger and CBS News Blog of the Year lists. That guy's support is fantastic. And of course, can't do it without Greg McFarlane, because who can have a podcast without hate mail? But we love Greg. It's always amazing to me that Greg can be so rough and tumble and has this love for cats that he has. He is a contradiction, which is exactly why we love Greg. The more I know Greg McFarlane, the more I really like hanging out with Greg. So thank you to the Roundtable team. Suzanne Lucas, the evil HR lady, who's been on the show a ton and will be on the show more. PK, he's no longer on the show. Dr. Dean, no longer on the show. Dominique Brown, who put time into the show. Also, Carrie Smith, who now has her own podcast, Carrie Smith of Careful Sense. They've been great contributors. So to our contributors, to the PR people, fantastic. I say that partly because another fantastic person online who sent us great guests is Jessica Rose from Interview Connections. And Jessica actually sent us a voicemail. So you're going to hear first Jessica Rhodes and, of course, our good friend Shannon McClay.
This is Jessica Rhodes, founder of InterviewConnections.com, and I want to congratulate Joe on 400 episodes of Stacking Benjamins. This is so impressive because if I talked about personal finance for 400 podcast episodes, I would be so bored. So congratulations, Joe, and keep it fun, keep it going. We all love the show.
Hello, Joe OG and everyone hanging out in Joe's mom's basement. This is Shannon from the Martinis and Your Money podcast, toasting you on achieving your 400th episode milestone. Congratulations. Some people listening to this may wonder how you could have achieved such a momentous feat given your clear lack of talent and financial acumen. But I can sum up your success in one sentence. Even a blind squirrel finds a nut once in a while. In your case, I guess you found 400 nuts. Either way, congrats Stacking Benjamins team for providing 400 episodes worth of useless information, and cheers to 400 more.
That right there is why we love Shannon McClay.
Love it.
It's so awesome. Thanks, Shannon from Martinis and Your Money in the Financial Gym. congratulations on the great launch of her financial gym. It's just exciting to see, OG. What is life without having good friends calling you names, huh?
Friends and family that you can argue with.
Yeah, friends like those, we don't even worry about enemies, right?
Yep.
So the last interview that I have for you today is one of the most exciting ones that we had. Speaking of PR people, I did not know how to get a hold of this gentleman. I just knew I'd read his book on constraints, on creativity and constraints, and I really wanted to have him on the show. So I went to the book publisher, Hyperion, and I wrote to them. And then I heard nothing for about a month. No, longer than that. I heard nothing for about 6 weeks. And then this gentleman's assistant saying that he would love to be on our show, and am I available to interview him tomorrow?
Out of the blue, like that.
Yes, and the answer was, heck yeah, absolutely. And I was supposed to go to Little Rock, I think, for a swim meet. And I actually, my family went and I stayed here at the basement to make sure that I got the interview done. And then I took a separate car because I had to interview this gentleman. So he was the producer of the Disney movies, Beauty and the Beast and The Lion King, producer of Frankenweenie and of Maleficent, starring Angelina Jolie and many, many more. Don Hahn came down to the basement and talked about constraints when it comes to creativity.
Now, you work right at the intersection of business and creativity, because some of our listeners are going to wonder why you're on the show. But entrepreneurs need to dream to create new products and a business plan. Individuals need to be creative to plan a more fun retirement. People need creative strategies to get out of credit card debt. But what I love about the beginning of your book is you say most people aren't very creative, but they're not creative, Don, because the nature of a to-do list that America loves so much is in direct odds with creativity. Can you explain that?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're all different. We all have different personality types, and some of us operate really logically and methodically, which is completely great and legitimate. I guess what I wanted to do in this book and in general is give you permission to not do that. Just because you learned in school that you have to do whatever. School is a great thing. We always need school. But you can also express yourself in ways that are unconventional. You can show up late. You can sleep in. You can make a list, or you cannot make a list. You can follow your head and have these moments of pure following your joy that will, in the end, kind of enrich you and give you a break and allow you to kind of explore some things. You know, so much of our kind of creative spirit and how we connect the dots in our life happens in the subconscious while we're sleeping, while we're walking, while we're doing other things. And that's what you want to give yourself a break to. If you're always making lists and always nose to the grindstone and rushing to get the kids to soccer and rushing to do whatever, we all do that. But you have to carve out some time for yourself to just to be. And it's not like, oh, I'm not working, I'm lazy, I'm just sitting here. No, you're not just sitting there. Your brain's working really hard. Even if you're staring at a candle, you know, you're working. So give yourself a break and allow yourself some time to do that.
Now, what I wonder about with you, Don, is that so you're in the middle right now, I believe, of producing Maleficent with Angelina Jolie. Mm-hmm. And so you're right at that spot where, I mean, part of the job of a producer is to make sure it comes on. It's very creative, but it comes in on time, on budget. How do you mesh business and creativity in your world?
Well, not very well, but but you listen, it's always been that way. Go to any artist. Michelangelo argued with the Pope. Any artistic endeavor has with it a sense of creativity that is sometimes hard to manage and sometimes hard to put a box around. But having said that, everything in life that we touch and interact with is designed by an artist. The clothes we wear, the cell phone we carry, the car we drive have all been designed, and our world is beautifully and heavily designed by artists. So obviously we've all found ways to meet commerce and the arts. I think the clue for me anyway is to open up to the other side, that it's not black and white. It's not us against them. It's not business against art. It's not me against the man. It's really, we all have that in our heads. And if you can see the other point of view and say, yes, I have to have this creative endeavor, but it has to operate in some sort of financial box, I think that's the key to it. And the thing that people hate about it is being boxed in. So what I always try to do is give creative partners a choice and say, listen, we can't afford to gold plate this, but we can gold plate a square inch of it, or you can silver plate a square foot of it, or you can lead plate a mile of it. You know, give people a choice of what they want, and inevitably creative people come up with really interesting solutions to problems if they don't feel boxed in. I think the worst thing you can do in any of our lives is just say, shut up and do what I told you to do. Or listen, we're out of money. We only have $1 and you have to spend it on this. That's basically telling the person to shut down. And at least in my life, that's never really leads to a good place.
Well, I think whether you're making movies or making cars, giving your employees some rope, I mean, is a huge reason why people stay for longer time periods with companies.
Yeah. And I really sign up to the old axiom, fail fast, fail often. Because if you know you're going to fail 100 times before you get to the good stuff, wouldn't you want to get through those failures fast so you can start seeing some things? It's all, I mean, a lot of that's about growing up too. You know, you have a sense in your 20s of what your taste is, of what's good, but you don't have any experience. So you're doing bad drawings and you're trying to figure out what you're going to do for a living. That's okay. That's normal. And you'll see once you get those drawings in and the miles and the hours in, you'll start to see the corner turn and you'll start to see better work. But you need to pay your dues and put the failures in. You can't be a great pianist without playing your scales, or a great chef without burning a million meals. And you want to do that and not fight it. It's a good thing.
I remember that interview as well.
I think it is very true, though, with financial planning. And Don obviously doesn't make this point because he's not in retirement planning, but the limited amount of money that you have, you think makes your retirement worse. It just makes you more creative. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't need to be worse. It can still be fantastic. We had a conversation at dinner with our friends, Claire and Kara and Jen, while we were in Maine. One of them was telling the story about taking a camper van around Iceland, like renting a camper van. And Iceland is super expensive, but, you know, talking about how awesome the trip to Iceland was because of the fact that they had done it their own way, you know?
I've never been to Iceland, but I do understand that it can be expensive to be there and to get there.
Right.
So you don't have to. We were talking about this earlier. Sometimes it's great to have good role models where we can kind of replicate or emulate or kind of have somebody in front of us that's blazing the trail. But just because they did it that way doesn't mean that you have to do it the same way. You know, we've certainly talked to and read about and learned about all sorts of different variations on what retirement looks like and what one person's cabin in the woods, leave me alone, live off the land is another person's first class air travel to 15 different countries a year. It's what makes us unique, but it also makes it important for you. You're not trying to build a financial plan or a retirement plan for the masses. You're building a retirement plan for you.
I love this idea that constraints make you stronger. I just thought that that was, I didn't expect that out of Don Hahn either. Mm-hmm. I expected him, you know, as a guy who's initially an artist, to think that controlling the purse strings is going to be a tough thing. He's like, nope, makes my artist better, which makes a ton of sense to me. So one more shout out to our sponsors for the show, Magnify Money and SoFi. We could not have done it without you two. Thank you very much to Nick and Brian and the team at Magnify Money. Head to stackingbenjamins.com/Magnify Money for more on that amazing organization to compare your checking, savings, debt products. And SoFi, the work that they do on student loans, on personal loans, love the fact that they have done some phenomenal work. They can do great work for you, and you get $100 if you use our link, stackingbenjamins.com/SOFI for more on SoFi. New sponsor coming online for the hotline segment next week. That will be fun and exciting, OG, to debut the new sponsor there. But for now, that's 400, man. Oh, I got a couple more people here. Let's say hello to Jessica and to our friends, Rich and Wim.
Hello, Joe. It's Jess Guerris from the Mo Money Podcast. Just want to congratulate you on reaching 400 episodes. That's a lot of episodes. Wow. Look at how far your beautiful radio voice has gotten you. I hope one day I'll be able to achieve the greatness that you have just achieved. So thanks for being an awesome podcaster friend and congrats on reaching 400 episodes.
Hey, this is Rich.
I'm Marcus.
And we are the faces made for radio behind the Paychecks and Balances podcast. And we wanted to congratulate you guys on 400 episodes.
Hey, flex bombs, flex bombs.
I know you guys have been doing this for a long time. It's definitely a great accomplishment. We aspire to get there one day, washed or otherwise.
Looking forward to that 400 degrees mixtape, fellas.
Yeah, you guys can have a show called Stacking Benjamins and not put out some type of album. Even if the lyrics are about money, it's still related. But nonetheless, congrats. Looking forward to 400 more.
Is the album What We Do Next? Is that our next project?
I think we have to release a single. I don't know the order of things, but I think we have to do a demo tape.
A demo tape. I don't think we get past the demo tape.
You never know.
I'm fairly certain.
It depends on which one of us is singing.
Yeah, the name of the song is Holy Crap, These Guys Are Out of Tune. That's going to be the name of it. So thanks to Rich and Marcus and to Jessica Morehouse. And man, to everybody who sent in stuff for this. And Dollar Friends have been on the show. Thanks a ton. Thanks to everybody who listened. That's the biggest thank you, OG. Without people actually listening to you and I, we probably still wouldn't be here. We very well might be here, but it'd be a lot lonelier.
Well, it's definitely the listeners that make it happen, and it's fun to see the feedback we get. It's fun to see you get the letters. It's fun to see more and more people. You know, you've worn your T-shirt out and had people say, "Oh, do you listen to that show too?"
Yeah,
that's
always fun. Yeah,
kind of, time to time, speaking.
Every once in a while, I listen to it. Right?
Yeah.
Not my favorite show, but
definitely
it's okay.
Not my favorite, but it'll do.
All right. Hey, everybody, we got the Green Room coming up on Saturday. That'll be a vintage episode. Richie, our show producer, and I will introduce that. 400th episode. We didn't thank those people. Jeez, we need to have a big thank you. You know, David Stein mentioned Kathleen. This show would not be anything without Kathleen, because Kathleen handles all of that stuff behind the scenes that you and I cannot handle and do not handle. So our partner that you never hear on the show, Kathleen Selmans, congratulations to you on 400 episodes. Thank you very much to our producer, Richie Rutter-Reese, for all the help writing and doing a lot of the thankless tasks that producers do. Richie is a great guy to work with. And of course, OG, our biggest fan from the beginning. CeCe's going to argue about this. But CeCe, he was around before you. Steve Stewart, our engineer. Mm-hmm. So just happy to have Steve as a friend. And
hey, Joe, yeah, hold on. Sorry, Joe, didn't want to interrupt the show, but we got two more people who called in and left messages while you and OG were broadcasting. So I want to go ahead and play them for you. I haven't checked them out to see what they're like, but looks like one's coming from Miranda Marquette and Harlan Landis from Adulting.tv. And the other one, Doug Goldstein and the CFPP. I don't know. I'm just going to let them roll.
This is Miranda.
And Harlan.
From Adulting.tv.
Congratulations to Stacking Benjamins
on your 400th episode.
Yeah, if you guys can manage it without being real adults.
Hey, we have some hope. All the best.
And we hope you manage to get through at least 400 more.
I'm Doug Goldstein, a financial planner, and I am here with the puppet Zach.
Oh, hey, I'm Zach, a CFPP. CFPP, that's a Certified Financial Planner's puppet. You know, Mr. G, I just finished binge listening to all 400 episodes of Stacking Benjamins, the show with the world's greatest hosts.
That's right, Zach, the show with greatest hosts. There's the other guy, and then there's the big cheese, the main man. Tell us his name, Zach.
Oh, that's the incredible Joe Saul Sehy, Mr. G.
Zach, man, how do you remember his name?
Well, Mr. G, you have a squishy brain in your head, but my head is stuffed with memory foam.
Yeah, fantastic stuff, Steve. All right, man, happy 400th to you, OG.
Thanks, buddy.
Couldn't have done it without you. All right, we'll see.
You probably could have. That's the one thing. That's the one person you could have done it without.
I gotta be fair. I know a lot of listeners who are like, we stay for OG. We hear the salty dog. Yeah. Doug, take it away, man.
This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC. The show is created by Joe Saul Sehy, produced by Richie Rutter-Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Special thanks to all of our friends who called in to wish us a happy 400 episodes. To keep the podcast under 5 hours, we'll just link to all these awesome podcasters in our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. Super special thanks to Jerome Benzvi from Haven Life for showing us how Haven is mixing life insurance and fintech. For more on Haven Life, head to havenlife.com. And finally, the biggest thanks ever to Joe's mom for tolerating what she calls all of these shenanigans. Mom, we love you and appreciate the fact that you haven't kicked us out of the basement. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor. And no thanks to Jimmy the Bookie for taking my money. He gave me big odds to take the under on 400 episodes, but I played the safe money. Now to ask Joe's mom for a small loan so he doesn't break my kneecaps.
What's wrong with you?
It's either this show or indigestion. I hope it's indigestion.
Why?
It'll get better in a little while.